take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We start you off as we always do with some headlines that you need to know. The Miami Dolphins have put together early plans for how to host fans in their stadium during the 2020 NFL season amid the coronavirus pandemic. During a Monday segment with Good Morning America, the Dolphins CEO revealed mock-ups of new entrances into Hard Rock Stadium that would help people adhere to social distancing guidelines. They've also set up a system that will include colored spots on the ground leading up to entrance gates to designate the distance needed between fans as they file in to the stadium. And also, it was made known that they would, with that mock-up, include all fans wearing masks and ordering food from their seats to then go upstairs and pick it up rather than waiting in line for concessions. This is just the beginning of their mock-up plans, but Hard Rock Stadium can hold about 65,000. By the mock-ups, it was all the way down to 15,000, but still, at least giving us some opportunity to see sports return, which brings us to another headline. ESPN has done a study, and according to their study, an ESPN coronavirus lockdown fan study surveyed 1,004 sports fans age 18 and older. 65% were in favor of sports returning, even if fans can't be in the stands. That approval number grew to 76% when participants were asked if they support the return of sports without fans in the stands if players were kept in hotels and their contact with others was closely monitored. So, as is not particularly shocking here, we understand that obviously fans want to see sports come back, even if that means no one's in the crowd. And the last headline has to do with the takeaway from Michael Jordan and The Last Dance. Again, was asked last night about his famous quote, "Republicans buy sneakers too." That came up in the fifth episode of The Last Dance. He didn't walk it back. His quote, "I don't think that statement needs to be corrected because I said it in jest on a bus with Horace Grant and Scottie Pippen. It was thrown off the cuff. My mother asked to do a PSA for Harvey Gantt. And I said, look, Mom, I'm not speaking out of pocket about someone I don't know, but I will send a contribution to support him," which is what I did. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. There's one other big headline, and I didn't want to lump it in simply with headlines because it deserves more than that. As obviously the NFL world is saddened today that Dolphins Hall of Fame coach Don Shula has passed at the age of 90 years old. The NFL's winningest coach, who remember, led the Miami Dolphins to the league's only undefeated season, passed away on Monday. That's its own headline in and of itself, separate from everything else, because it gives us a lot to get into. And we'll start there with some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan, 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G, just $45 a month, saving you up to half the cost of big carriers. Everything for less. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. We're going to use a little bit of Don Shula's legacy and The Last Dance together to get our question for you for First Take, Your Take. I want to know the single greatest season, the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. As we mentioned, Don Shula took the Dolphins to an undefeated season. We've been watching The Last Dance with the Bulls. Obviously, the Warriors have had some recent success. We can go up and down the gamut. Any sport, I want you to tell me the greatest single season you've ever seen. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Before we get into any of your take, and frankly, before we get into any of First Take's thoughts on Don Shula, we thought it would be important to start the show by giving a moment here for Don Shula to be given the shine he deserved. This is Chris Berman speaking about the great Dolphins head coach.
Shula has the greatest command presence of any coach I've ever known.
You felt Shula was there. When he walked into our meeting room, everybody just hushed up.
The presence was the jaw and his determination. He was into the game with every bit of emotion that he had.
I wear my feelings on my sleeve, and there is no camouflage. And I think in some ways that might have been intimidating.
Above all, Don Shula was a disciplined teacher who got the most out of his players.
Every single mistake was talked over, why it was made, what we did, what the situation was. Minute detail.
We always went into a game feeling we were completely prepared on anything they could throw at us.
In 33 years coaching the Baltimore Colts and the Miami Dolphins, Shula won an NFL record 347 games. Blessed during his tenure with quarterbacks with distinctly different styles, Johnny Unitas, Bob Greasy, and Dan Marino, Shula consistently adapted to his team's strength.
He's able to walk that fine line between not wavering when you shouldn't and realizing when change is taking place, and you should.
In the 1960s, he won in Baltimore on the arm and savvy of Unitas. But when the coach moved to Miami in 1970, he devised a game plan that used short, surgically precise passes. Why not? The Dolphins owned a devastating running game.
They had a great Hall of Fame quarterback, Bob Greasy, but he wasn't a guy who could complete 30 passes a game.
He provided me with the tools and the car and to run, and I was going to take care of this car. I mean, I knew the strengths and weaknesses of our operation.
Shula's six Super Bowl appearances are punctuated by the one and only perfect season in NFL history. The Dolphins went 14-0 in the 1972 regular season and advanced to Super Bowl VII. But for Shula, there was more to it. The year before with Miami, he had lost Super Bowl VI, and previously in Baltimore in 1968, he had lost Super Bowl III. Shula was anxious to make amends.
You know, it had to be the most pressure in my coaching career, because I certainly didn't want to be 0-3 in Super Bowls. Finally winning the Super Bowl in the perfect season, you know, that was something that took me off the hook. So that was a pretty important game in my career.
The 73 Dolphins repeated as Super Bowl champions. And although they were not undefeated, at times, this team looked even more powerful than the 72 team. A decade later, Shula's game plan evolved drastically, yet without a hitch, with a quick-firing quarterback named Dan Marino.
I give him a lot of credit for my early development as a quarterback and being able to step in and basically start after my fourth game.
Shula continued to win. Six more division titles and two AFC championships in the 12 seasons from 1974 to 1985. Not to mention one of the most famous regular season games ever. The Monday Night Dolphins win at the Orange Bowl over the then undefeated Chicago Bears.
Ball is deflected in the air.
More playoff berths ensued after 1985, but some questioned his ability to capture a Super Bowl with Marino, which he never did. Shula retired from the game after the 1995 season, more than three decades after he began in the NFL as head coach, more than four decades if you include his years as an assistant and as a player.
Coach, you've been my coach, and you'll always be my coach.
Well, I hope that I'm going to be remembered as, the coach that won the most games, the perfect season, certainly, and then also for trying to do things the right way. I'm very happy and proud of my career.
Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio. Again, the passing of Don Shula today has a lot of reaction coming from everybody, and some of that was on First Take today as Max and Marcus Spears talk specifically about Shula and his legacy and what he meant to the NFL.
In terms of his legacy as a football coach, he's easily one of the five greatest NFL head coaches of all time. You know, the list starts with Belichick, and before it was started with Belichick, it started with Lombardi, and otherwise Bill Walsh is in there, like in the top three or four somewhere. I would say top three. And Shula is the other name that belongs in that category, or maybe right there next to it. And I don't know that there's anyone else that you can really mention with those guys. Shula's one of those guys. You coach Johnny Unitas and Dan Marino. And by the way, neither one of those guys was your quarterback when you went undefeated, the only undefeated team in history. He's one of the, when you say like one of the all-time greats or Hall of Famers, but then you say, because inevitably the Hall of Fame, the standards, people question, well, if this guy's in, then this guy should be in. And eventually you have some guys who are bubble Hall of Famers or solidly Hall of Famers, but it doesn't really express what the Michael Jordans or Babe Ruths are, right? Like, how do we talk? And so people say there should be kind of an inner circle in the an inner sanctum of the Hall of Fame for only the best among the Hall of Famers. That's what Don Shula is among NFL coaches. He belongs in the Hall of Fame of the Hall of Fame coaches.
Yeah, Max, I like that you said that. Here's the thing. I'm not going to pretend that I have personal anecdotal tales about Don Shula, but what I do know is meeting him one time, he was an encyclopedia of the game of football. I think his legacy is obviously going to be being perfect in an NFL football season when it comes to what how he did his job, longevity. The hardest thing in the NFL is staying power. And for him to do it for 33 years and win as much as he did, that comes with the ability to not only connect with players beyond playing the game, but it also comes with being able to evolve with what the game was becoming. Max just mentioned that going from Johnny U to Dan Marino is a big jump in how the league changed and evolved during that time. So I think Don Shula deserves a lot of credit for not only being a great coach, but one of the pillars of the NFL and one of those guys where you really span out and look over his coaching tree, you'll really understand the influence he's had on what the NFL is today, and let alone that, the game of football. So it's a huge loss for the NFL community, but I agree with Max. 90 years and as much success and things that he's been able to see and actually get his roses while he was still living for the work that he did and put in throughout the NFL in terms of what he was able to accomplish, but also how he impacted the lives of got players and people around the game is not enough to be said. You only get a few of these, too, by the way. Like, you only get a few guys like Don Shula. I know we cover sports, and I know a lot of people we talk to live and are around the game of football, basketball, whatever the professional sport that we talk about. So we kind of take it for granted. But the fact that Don Shula was able to do his job at this high of a level for this period of time, it's different. It's special. So that, I think that'll be a big part of his legacy when you talk about it from a football terms. But obviously, the perfect season and winning the Super Bowl is what comes to the forefront of most football people's mind.
Yeah. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. That's Marcus Spears and Max Kellerman giving you some context on the legacy of Don Shula. That's something we're going to get a lot of today, is context on that legacy from people that were around him and know. We're doing the best we can to sort of honor that thought process by taking it and also taking the last dance, lumping it all together and asking you guys, what's the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport? As much as we've had our eye on this, you can tweet me at Jason Fitch. You can also call 888-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Getting a lot of tweet votes at this point for LSU and the undefeated season we saw last year. Not sure if there's some recency bias on that, but I think anytime you have an undefeated season where a quarterback sets new records, that stands out. Jason on Twitter says the 72-10 Bulls, they won it all, didn't waste a great season falling short when it mattered the most. Joshua came in and said so many of the most memorable regular seasons finished just short. Great point. As he points out, the 08 Patriots, the 16 Warriors, and even the 18 Vegas Golden Knights. You guys can keep tweeting me. Joe in Missouri, what's the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport?
Kansas City Chiefs. This last season, 2019-2020, was definitely one of the greatest, with the comebacks, the fourth quarters in the playoffs, and just the regular season drama with Patrick Mahomes getting injured. It was the greatest season I think I've ever seen in my 52 years.
I think there might be a bit of bias, though, on you know, I'm guessing you're a Chiefs fan because they weren't the top seed in the AFC coming out, right? So can you have the greatest single season ever? I know it ended with the Super Bowl. Like, how do we balance these undefeated sort of Patriots seasons that we all remember, the undefeated season they lose the Super Bowl to the Giants, versus what we saw last year for the Chiefs? Because I'm with you, by the end of the year, incredible, but I'm not sure the rest of that time warranted the best single season we've ever seen. Richard in Oklahoma City, what do you got? What's your take on the best season you've ever seen in any sport?
For me, I mean, I'm a big English football fan, big Arsenal fan. 2003-04 season, 26 wins, 12 draws, 0 losses for the entire league.
Ah, so that's tough to top, and we've had a few votes for that on Twitter. Also got a vote for 15-16 Leicester City, deserves a shout. Preseason favorite to be relegated, 5,000-1 odds to win the Premier League title. Team was full of mostly no-name players at the time. Hell of a story. Totally right that the story sort of brings some of that into light when you've got a team that you expect not to be great, but then turns around and does it. Yannick said the 72 Dolphins went 14-0 in the regular season, won all three postseason games, including Super Bowl against the Redskins, to finish 17-0. The team remains the only NFL team to complete an entire season undefeated and untied from the opening game. So, yes, that absolutely stands out to a lot of people. 1994 Penn State Nittany Lions getting some college football votes in there. Mike in Cincinnati, who do you have as the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport?
First of all, thanks for taking my call, Fitz, and my condolences also to the Shula family. You know, I don't know for sure, but I think Don may have been one of those Miami of Ohio legacy coaches, the cradle of coaches, they call it, with Ara Parseghian and Weebu Bank and, oh, Bill Arnsberger. There's a bunch of them, but I'm not sure if he went to Miami of Ohio or coached there or not. But my greatest season was the 80 was the and I can't remember the year, Fitz. I know it was in the 80s, of course, when the Lakers finally broke through and beat those damn Boston Celtics at Boston. I cried. I was so emotionally attached to that team with Magic, especially.
Well, and that's a, I think that's a good, the breakthrough is a big part of that. You know, when we think about sort of what makes particular series and particular championships more special, I think the breakthrough, any time that you get the opportunity to win a championship when you've been trying and struggling to get through that year in and year out. The Lakers finally did that in 85. It was the year after they lost the 84 Celtics to the Celtics then, but then it went all the way back to the 50s. My God, it was 85. They won the series 4-2. That sort of turned everything to a different page there. We're taking your thought on the greatest single season in sports we've ever seen. Bill on Twitter said, best sports season, NCAA hockey. University of Maine, 92 or 93, won the national title with a record of 42-1-2. See, when you can put it all together, that's the perfect part of it. You guys know I grew up in Vegas as a little kid. It's always difficult for me to sort of navigate, you know, the national championship team for UNLV that the following year was a better team, went undefeated, but lost in the final four shockingly to Duke. So the better team, but the better season is always the season that ends in a championship. We're having that conversation because obviously the passing of Don Shula, and everybody knows such a huge part of his legacy is the championship, the undefeated season that he took the Dolphins to. That's not the only part of his legacy, though. Dan Le Batard obviously knows the Miami perspective better than anybody at ESPN, and he talked a little bit about Miami and Shula specifically.
Someone who is on the Mount Rushmore in South Florida in terms of sports names, Don Shula, has passed away at the age of 90 years old. He had been weakened and wheelchair-bound for the last 5 years or so, but was still a pillar of grace and integrity. What a brutal time. Not that there's ever a good time to die, Stu Gatz, but what a brutal time specifically to die where you don't get those last moments in person with your family. Or that it's made very difficult by the circumstances. And for those of you tuning in now, who don't know what Don Shula meant to South Florida, he was the first credible giant sports thing that we had that was national. You can make the argument that the Dolphins have never been as relevant as they were under Don Shula, that the Dolphins have spent the last 25 years desecrating what he built in South Florida with a perfect season, with two Super Bowl championships, with Belichick still needs wins to catch him on the career wins list. He's got an expressway named after him in South Florida, but he's from a bygone time where a coach could be this authoritarian figure and also become role model and picture of strength. He was a spiritual man. He was a hard man. He was a leader of the highest order. And Stu Gatz, when we're talking about, you know, top five personalities in sports in the history of South Florida, you're talking about Don Shula. You're talking about Pat Riley. You're talking about Dwayne Wade. You're talking about Dan Marino. And that's basically the list. Like, you have a hard time getting to five in terms of somebody who says Miami and sports more than those four guys.
Great perspective from Dan Le Batard, who obviously understands the legacy to Don Shula and Miami and Florida in general better than most of us ever possibly could. We're asking you, what's the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport, getting a lot of different votes at this point. The Yankees, 92,000. Paul, this one's good. The 2015 U.S. Women's National Soccer Team blitzed everyone. We are already seeing a divide. Greatest, does that mean best team you've ever seen? Or does that seem to mean the most unexpected championship? Because it's definitely being defined differently by different people at this point as everybody tries to figure out sort of what it means to them. We'll keep taking your take on a 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I want you to tell me the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport. Also, tell me why. We're going to take more of your take. Plus, Andy Dalton headed back to the Lone Star State. We'll talk to a source close to the Cowboys to figure out what it all means. But first, while you can't believe everything on social media these days, you can believe it's possible to start a new life, not as a backup quarterback for the Cowboys. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're asking you for the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the conversation. We'll get more of your take coming in just a second. In the meantime, there was some big news over the course of the weekend. And look, there was a heated, let's say a spirited debate on Golic and Wingo Friday morning as Mike Golic Sr. and I were debating what the best spot was for Andy Dalton. Now, in our hypothetical debate, the question was, do you go start somewhere for a team like Jacksonville or try to start for a team like Jacksonville where you have a clear path to the court or to the field? Or do you go somewhere where you're more likely buried as a backup, but you're in a better situation? We weren't sure what the right approach was going to be, and then we got the answer for that. Andy Dalton signs a deal to go to the Dallas Cowboys as a backup quarterback, a place where, frankly, I think the expectation would be that he doesn't see a lot of playing time. But if he does, oh my God, the weapons he's going to have around him. So let's get some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And that comes in the form of ESPN Cowboys reporter Todd Archer, who joins us right now. Todd, I hope you and yours are safe. Thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it. What was your initial reaction to the breaking news that Andy Dalton is now a Dallas Cowboy?
Well, initially it was, oh, it's Saturday night. Come on. What do I got to go back and write all this stuff now? but no, it wasn't like, ooh, they're sending a message to Dak. It was more, wow, they got the best backup quarterback in the NFL. And if something were to happen to Dak, they got to feel a lot better about Andy Dalton than they would about Cooper Rush. And it kind of got me thinking to when Romo was the quarterback early in his time, you had guys like Brad Johnson, John Kitten, and Kyle Orton as his backups making really good money, that the Cowboys were kind of getting back to that plan. So it was immediately thought of Stephen Jones saying, player acquisition, 365 days a year, you look for all these ways to get your team better, and Andy Dalton made the Cowboys a better team when they signed him on Saturday.
So I can see how Andy Dalton helps the Cowboys. How do the Cowboys help Andy Dalton?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think part of this is kind of led him to the Cowboys in a way because of what we're all dealing with this pandemic going on. And I don't know if he wanted to uproot his family and go somewhere new and start over and have to worry about everything a starting quarterback has to worry about. He lives in Dallas. He lives about a half hour from the Cowboys facility. He doesn't have to uproot the family. He knows the area, obviously. He went to TCU. So there was probably a comfort level of just staying here, staying close to home. And if it's just for a year, it's just for a year, and then you can kind of reboot after that. But I do think what we're all dealing with now kind of played a part and led him to the Cowboys to be Dak's backup. Because I don't know if the Cowboys thought about – I'm sure they thought about it because you have to, but I don't think they really outwardly considered or really overly pursued it when he became available and Cincinnati released him.
We're talking to ESPN Cowboys reporter Todd Archer. It's First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. So is in your mind moving forward, is this the beginning of his career as a Andy Dalton's career is now just a permanent backup in the NFL?
32 years old. He's had four straight seasons, I think, where he's had a losing record. Obviously, he had just the two wins last year. Probably so. And, you know, think of a guy that I mentioned that backed up Romo and John Kitna. Was a starting quarterback in Seattle for a good spell, started in Detroit for a little bit, started in Cincinnati for a little bit, and backed up Carson Palmer as well for a year, I think. I might be right on that. But once he got into a certain element of his career as a backup, you know, they're probably more comfortable in that spot. But you don't want to say that in terms of of a guy who's thinking, I'm done playing, I just want to cash a check. I'm sure that's not Andy Dalton's mindset at all. I'm sure he's just looking at it from perspectives of a good team. If I need to play, I'm surrounded, as you mentioned earlier, with all this talent, that I can come in and still be an effective player. You know, we'll see what happens in 2021 if another team were to come make him an offer and we're clear, free and clear of this virus, that he maybe takes up a different opportunity that he didn't want, might not have wanted to take up here in 2020.
We're talking to Cowboys reporter Todd Archer. So, Todd, a quarterback can't sign a contract without us having to figure out what it means for Dak. So what does it say to you that Andy Dalton was able to get a deal done quickly and quietly, and we're still sitting here and have nothing with Dak?
Yeah, I don't think it's a leverage play here by the Cowboys to say, all right, Dak, we just signed a guy. Where if you don't want to show up, we're good. If that is a point, it's a minuscule percentage is the reason why the Cowboys signed him. This is about making their team better, as I stated in the beginning. And I think for the Cowboys, you know, you're now just sitting here waiting to get this deal done. And we've been waiting for an awful long time to get this thing done. And, you know, I'll go back, and Jason, I think I said this to you the last time that I was on with you, when Jerry told us during the Zeke talks, when have I not gotten a deal done? It'll eventually get done. It has to get done before July 15th, or he has to play the season on the tender. But I also go back to this with Dak. He played last year for $2 million. He's not going to play this year for $31 million. So, you know, I have a feeling he's going to play. And he needs to play, because if he wants to cash in again in 2021, either through a long-term deal with the Cowboys or another franchise tag, or if the Cowboys decide that they want to move on in 2020, he needs another good year. So there's an element of Dak needing to make sure everything is right with him in 2020 for this first year with Mike McCarthy as well. So I just think it makes too much sense for both sides to get this thing done. And honestly, I wish this thing was over 8 months ago, let alone 8 minutes ago.
Well, but then, Todd, we'd have to actually talk about real football, and that's not as fun as talking about contracts and drama.
Hey, okay, the Cowboys. There'll be something else that would pop up. We'd be all right.
That is also a fair point. You mentioned Mike Martz. Is there any effect in this pandemic era where, you know, everything's running differently, obviously? Is there any effect to Dak? You know, is there a time when you become concerned about Dak not being around the organization to learn whatever this new offense looks like as this contract stuff plays out?
It's interesting. When we talked to McCarthy before the draft, he wouldn't say whether Dak was or was not part of these virtual meetings. Clearly he wasn't, because if he was, he would have said so. But he also said he's had communication with the coaches. So, you know, I'm sure he's had some discussions with Kellen Moore, and the coordinator, and Doug Nussmeier, their quarterback's coach, and is up to speed on what some of the changes are. But, you know, look, he can't be on the field with these guys. So not being around for a virtual offseason program is certainly different of not being around for an actual offseason program, where he would be on the field throwing to these guys, talking to his coaches more in depth in the film room, and then having OTAs and a mini camp later as we go along through the different phases. You know, I don't know if there's a cutoff point where you start to get alarmed, because he's a guy that's never missed a game, never missed a practice, hardly, until last year when he was dinged up a little bit with the shoulder. But I think Dak will be fine week one, whenever week one is for the Cowboys and whoever they're playing. I guess we'll find out later this week when the schedule comes out.
You guys can follow him on Twitter at Todd Archer. Todd, there's one thing I hope for you, my friend. I hope that when he does get this deal signed, it's on like a Thursday, so you don't have to go back and write it on a Saturday. That's all we hope for.
Well,
Todd, thanks for your time, man.
You got it. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it.
Great stuff from Todd, as always. Some Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. One important thing he said near the end of our conversation that you just heard was, we have to remember Dax never missed a game, barely missed a practice. I think that was one of the more surprising parts of me. Look, yes, I've squarely been in the camp that Andy Dalton's going to go to a situation where he can rehab his image and he can go somewhere, and if he gets limited time, he can be as successful as humanly possible. I think all of those things can hold true. My surprise in going to the Cowboys wasn't the situation in that sense. My surprise in going to the Cowboys was he's not likely to get on the field. So either there wasn't a good opportunity for him to start, or more likely. We have to acknowledge the other thing that Todd made clear there. This pandemic society that we're in now changes the way things are viewed. So Andy Dalton goes somewhere where he has a great situation as a backup. He's making good money, much better than Jameis Winston, to be frank, is making as the backup for the Saints. He gets to make good money in a situation where he has great weapons around him. If things go awry somehow and there is a holdout and he gets on the field, he's got greatness around him that's going to help him look good out of the gates. He can get familiar with it in an area where he stays close to home. All of these sort of building blocks lead you to a Lego castle that's actually a pretty good situation for Andy Dalton. My one concern is a real one, and that's if this contract gets worked out, and I believe it will, and if Dak signs a mega deal, and I believe he will, then likely Dak's going to be on the field for every single snap. And that's the situation. I don't know how Andy Dalton changes the perception of who Andy Dalton has become as a quarterback. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Tune in to the ESPN Daily Podcast. Get you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Always great work by Mina and company on what they do there. I want to get a little bit more of your take. We're brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Asking you what the single greatest season you've ever seen in any sport is. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Sean in Connecticut, what do you got as the greatest season you've ever seen?
Hey, Fitz, how you doing, man?
Doing great, thanks.
Good. So, yeah, you know what? This is probably a bad take, but mine is the 96 Yankees.
Tell me why.
Well, it's the only team that I've seen in my entire life. I'm 42 years old. I've gone through the Bulls. I've gone through everything. Their season wasn't great, but when they got to the playoffs, there just were no one was going to touch them. You're not going to beat me. We're going to win. Looks in their faces. I watched every game from top to bottom, and it was the best I've ever seen by far.
So that's an interesting – thanks for your take on it. And that's really interesting because we've seen this from a few people now. I think unexpected championship runs are really being – that's what people are sort of associating with the greatest single season you've ever seen. And to that extent, I mean, greatest isn't asking for the most dominant. We're asking for the greatest. So greatest can mean, you know, the tremendous comeback out of nowhere. Because for me, if you're asking greatest, and when I think greatest, I think of such the dominance we got out of the undefeated Patriots season that ended with the Super Bowl loss. So, you know, how do we quantify a dominant season where you felt like week in and week out they couldn't be stopped with the fact that they ultimately didn't win a championship? Same thing that many people, I think, are asking about Golden State, you know, and how we qualify that. I'm interested to get more of your thoughts on this because we have so many varied answers on it. We'll keep taking your take. By the way, if you love Nature Valley Sweet and Salty Bars, you'll love the new Sweet and Salty Minis. Oh, so awesome. It's all the indulgent, savory goodness you know now in a smaller size and only at 100 calories. Snacking has never been so sweet. I want to get more of your sweet take on the best single season you've ever seen in any sport. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You've stacked the line, so we're going to let you get some of your take in. Plus, the Bears are not picking up Mitchell Trubisky's fifth-year option. Is the former number two overall pick now just a bust? You'll hear what First Take thought next. First Take, your take on ESPN News. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. What's the single greatest season you've ever seen in any sport? We're asking that in honor of some of what we're watching with The Last Dance, but mostly in honor of the passing of NFL legendary head coach Don Shula, who, of course, coached the Dolphins to the only undefeated season. If you missed the first hour of today's show, by the way, go check it out. Some really cool stuff on Don Shula's legacy. It's on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast brought to you by Capital One. Why settle for average? With Capital One, you can open a savings account with a rate 5 times the national average. Welcome to banking. Reimagine what's in your wallet. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. We'll get a little bit of your take in just a second, but there was some news out of the Chicago area this weekend as the Bears did not pick up the fifth-year option on quarterback Mitchell Trubisky. I don't know if that stuns a lot of people, but Max and Marcus Spears had the debate on whether or not it is now fair to label Mitchell Trubisky a bust.
Yeah, so far it is. Not only because there were quarterbacks who look like they're heading for the Hall of Fame taken after him, they traded up to get Trubisky, but because he simply hasn't performed very well in spite of being on some pretty good teams. You look at recent examples of athletic quarterbacks who didn't fulfill the expectations of very high draft position. I mean, RG3 got hurt, but he was a sensational rookie. Blake Bortles, I think it's safe to say, considering his draft position, was if not a bust, then something like it, you know? And we've seen with Tannehill, he was going to be considered a bust, and then he resurrected his career. That's very strange to see that. High first, like a first-round pick who does that, Marcus, and then obviously Mariota and Winston busts. I think Trubisky, if he doesn't turn things around, fits into that category.
Yeah, he fits into that category. And there's levels to it. The fact that a team trades up to get you as high as he went, and obviously he'll be connected with Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, the expectation was for Mitch Trubisky to be the franchise quarterback. Obviously, that's not what he is going to be in Chicago because they denied a fifth-year option. I think he's going to make like $9 million, but also bringing in Nick Foles to shore up that football team. When you get drafted as high as Mitch Trubisky did, when you have when teams trade up to get you and you turn out to produce this as opposed to the guys that were drafted at quarterback in the same draft and how they're producing, not saying you have to be them, this is declared a bust. And it's because not only it's the quarterback position, but how high you were drafted and you were on a good team. You were on a team that was supposed to contend as well. So yes, at this point, Mr. Trubisky is considered a bust.
You have to show at some point that you were an excellent quarterback. Trubisky's never been an excellent NFL quarterback.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. They're both right, Marcus, especially when in context of the trade and who you didn't take, it's only leveled more pressure into that situation for Mitchell Trubisky. Not a surprise for anyone. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Brian in Ohio, tell me, what's the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport?
Well, I'm going to combine like five seasons into one, if that's okay.
Sure, go for it. What do you got?
I'm going to go the 2013 to 2018 UConn women's basketball team.
Give me the deets. Why?
188-3 in 5 years of playing, three national titles, all five seasons, ACC title. And then, of course, you'd have the two undefeated seasons within that 5 years. So, I mean,
yeah, and look, I love the take on it, and I should never say give me the deets. Why? We'll just forgive me for that. But I love the take on it. We've had a lot of tweets at this point for UConn, and I understand why. I mean, that period of dominance is absolutely incredible. We've gotten some single-season votes, too. John says, greatest seasons, Tiger doing the slam, Serena, Michael Phelps, Usain Bolt. Like, trying to figure out where individual sports fall on this is also really interesting. And then age, you know, I think just depends on what we grew up and what we saw at different times. That's what makes the conversation so interesting to me, is that you can make a case for greatness being a tremendous playoff run, or greatness being dominance throughout the course of a regular season, or greatness being front to back. What about greatness that's ending a curse? A lot of great tweets coming in on it. Keep it coming. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the conversation. The greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport. Coming up too, we got The Last Dance episodes 5 and 6 last night. You'll hear from Magic Johnson on First Take next. First Take, your take, ESPN Radio.